Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Let me go to my guest, Louis Perron. Sounds very like a very famous name, doesn't it? Louis Perron, like Ava. Anyway, the new book he has out caught my eye. So we decided to get the author. And the book is called Beat the Incumbent, Proven Strategies and Tactics to Win Elections. And the reason I thought this was interesting was because currently at the moment, of course, we have elections coming up in June, the European elections. We have the local elections coming up in June. We have the general election coming up at the end of the year. We're all watching America and the elections that are going on there currently at the moment as well with Donald Trump and Joe Biden and everybody else. And mind you, American politics is so entertaining. So, you know, and the tricks and the tips and the things they use to get your vote. Now, it was getting praised, this particular book, far and wide, including whether you're a political scientist, a journalist, or a candidate on the ballot. We can all learn lessons and results from several engaging campaigns. Perron provides a strategic landscape for how modern campaigns are won and lost in today's unpredictable and often hostile political terrain. And that's according to Donna Brazile, who's the former interim chairwoman of the Democratic National Committee. So it's basically a book on how to win an election. And I have a feeling this information may be very useful to many of us listening, because we can then suss out how the politicians are actually doing it and we can be one step ahead of them. Louis, good evening to you. Nice to talk to you.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for having me.
And it's a very interesting book from those who are either running for election and going into politics, or for those of us who are not, who are just the, you know, the citizens, on how the politicians fool us and the lies they and the lies they tell us just to get elected. So, you know, when somebody decides I'm going to run as a candidate, be it for Europe or local elections or general election, I mean, I'm assuming it's an expensive process, firstly.
Financially and emotionally so, yes. And sometimes I'm a bit surprised how naive people are when they enter politics. Like, I often get emails from people. They say, well, right now I don't have a job, I have no money, but I have really a great idea what my town needs. And I mean, yeah, politics, electoral politics, the reality of it is very different. It's rough and tumble. The risk is the media and many people will not care about your great ideas. So often the first question I ask a candidate is, are you sure you really want to do this to yourself?
Yeah, because you're exposing yourself publicly, aren't you?
Yes. And I mean, it also has become just so really common to bash and trash politicians, and social media has not made things easier in that respect.
Certainly not. Yeah, so I mean, all the skeletons come out of the closet. Yeah, all the skeletons will come out of the closet, so to speak. Yeah.
Yes, and I think few people have to absorb and just live with more insults than politicians. Mm. I mean, and after all, it's us who elect them, right?
But here's the thing. I often say this, okay, because I work in media, obviously similar to being in politics, you're exposed to the public, right? So, you know, you have to be extra careful about things and I'll kind of carry on. But, and I get insults and I get abused and I get all that kind of stuff too on social media as well, but I don't particularly care. But politicians get abused on a regular basis, you know, called names. But you got to have a thick skin, Louis, if you understand what I mean. If you're going to be a politician, you know what to expect. And if you're not able for that, well, then just don't do it, because you just have to expect to be abused to some degree.
You need a very thick skin, yes. And the problem, though, is that as a challenger, and that's what I write about. Now, if you're new on the block, you're particularly vulnerable to attacks. Because if you hear new information, let's say about the prime minister, that represents a tiny fraction of information people have about the prime minister. But if you're the new kid in town, if you're a challenger, maybe you're raised to the national scene very rapidly, people have very limited information about you. And that makes you particularly vulnerable for attacks. I mean, I don't. One person I write about in the book is Annalena Baerbock, the German leader of the German Green Party, who really was new on the scene and became a target very rapidly and was brutally hit by attacks from various fronts.
Yeah, well, the Green Party do get, the same in this country, by the way, the Green Party do get quite a bit of abuse. Eamon Ryan is the leader of the Green Party in this country, and he gets quite a lot of abuse, both online and every other way as well. Now, but mind you, some of it is very unfair, but some of it is warranted. I mean, we got to understand that politicians are making decisions. You know, these people who get elected are going to make decisions that affect their lives. So that's why people have a vested interest, you know, in making sure it's the right person. So what are the strategies they use? I mean, do we just expect that politicians will lie?
No, I would not expect that. I think it nowadays, especially with the 24-hour media, I would actually not advise to lie. Mm. I would always advise a candidate, you know, people are tough, people are adults, treat them like adults and they'll act like adults.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have bad news to say, I think it's better to tell to break the bad news, better be the one to say it yourself,
yeah.
So you can try and frame it. What does happen, however, is that, of course, people reinvent themselves, right? And they absorb new information and therefore change opinions. But I think that's a fair game and that's to be expected.
Are you allowed to change your opinion? Because we get that all the time with politics in this country. You know that such and such a Taoiseach or a Prime Minister, as you would call it, say, oh, you know, 10 years ago you said this and now you're saying completely the opposite. Are you allowed to change your mind?
Absolutely.
Mm.
In French, there is a saying that only idiots don't change their mind. Of course, now the world is changing so rapidly, we absorb new information, you're allowed to change your mind. The question is, of course, again, people are not stupid. They may know or may have a suspicion why you're changing your mind.
Okay.
So if it's just because the public opinion has changed, because your situation has changed, maybe if it's not a genuine change of mind, that's an issue.
Okay, so if you believe it's a truthful change of mind rather than a strategic change of mind, in other words, playing to the public gallery, well, that's wrong. But if it's truthful and you genuinely believe it from the heart, you'll get away with it easier.
Yes, and I would even go one step further. I would say that if you have what we call a policy disagreement with the public, if you explain it well, you can get away with it. People will, I think, rather accept somebody who tells you, okay, I know this is the public opinion, but my opinion is different than somebody who is like, you know, like the wind, changes like the wind.
Yeah.
One example I write about in the book is actually François Mitterrand, the French president, former French president, about the death penalty, who did exactly that.
Yeah.
Said, I know people are for the death penalty. Well, I'm against it, and here's why. And he got elected.
That's right. I do remember that, actually, at the time, because I remember covering that story on the show. We were talking about the death penalty, and I remember going back to that. So I do remember that particular story. Now, you've won numerous campaigns, but campaigns nowadays are very different to the way campaigns were run. You know, when I was younger, your campaign existed by knocking on doors and putting posters up on lampposts. Nowadays, campaigns can be won and lost online.
Yes and no.
Okay.
I think that online is, of course, part of a campaign. And yes, the media environment, the tools available have changed dramatically. I've also been teaching political marketing actually for more than a decade. And it's every year we talk about it. And yes, compared to 10 years ago, it has changed dramatically, the environment. That said, I think the fundamentals of sound electoral strategy have not changed.
Okay.
You need a message, you need a clear targeting strategy, and you need a plan on how to communicate your message to your target audience. And that message has to be short, simple, relevant. You have to be a credible messenger for it. You need to inoculate for your weaknesses and harp on your strengths. And I think those basic fundamentals of electoral strategy will be there for some time to come.
Mm-hmm. And in relation to the mistakes that people make, I mean, candidates, what are the biggest mistakes they make?
The biggest mistake, I think, is to produce campaign material, whether it's online or offline, whether it's leaflets or billboards or online material, without a message, without content, that just shows their face and maybe a slogan that is empty of content and they waste tremendous resources on it. I think that's by far the biggest mistake candidates make. They overestimate money and they underestimate the power of a well-researched, well-defined message carried out with discipline. Mm. If you think about somebody like Donald Trump, Barack Obama, you may like or dislike them, but they have been the messenger of a message over years, and it was the same message over 2-3 years.
Yeah, the message doesn't change. I mean, as much as you may or may not like Donald Trump, and people do like him and people hate him and all sorts of things, you got to give the man credit that he is a good campaigner.
Yes, I mean, Make America Great Again is one of the best slogans.
MAGA.
I would say, I think it's one of the best. I think Get Brexit Done probably is second, whether you're for or against Brexit, but it's just a great slogan. Now, a good slogan, though, is more than just a play of words. It should really summarize your campaign message with umph. And Make America Great Again does that.
Yeah.
And it's actually the word again that gives it content, now, and shows contrast with his opponent. So, yes, he's a great campaigner. I think one thing also, if you don't stand up for yourself, you lose your best advocate. So that's something any politician in the world can learn from Donald Trump. Whether you like or dislike him, he does stand up for himself and defend himself.
I was going to say that. I mean, look, you look at what's been thrown at him this year, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, he's able to take it. And it takes some sort of, you know, it takes a very special individual to be able to absorb all of that negative and negativity, you know, be it, I don't know, indictments or whatever it happens to be. It takes somebody very special, because most people would fail miserably at that. They would fall back, they would cower out, they would go into hibernation, they would disappear. They just wouldn't be able to handle that kind of stuff.
Yes, I mean, he's probably the most polarizing politician on God's earth right now. And that's another thing, talking about social media, people always dream about social media, about being viral and having a big following. And yes, Donald Trump used it very, very effectively. But hey, he's paying a very high price.
Are you willing
to take it, to take all the name calling for the 70 million followers?
Yeah.
I mean, he's paying a big price for it.
Well, he obviously wants it, because you don't get paid that much for doing it. I don't know whether the American president gets paid $300,000 or $400,000 a year. It's not a huge amount of money. So he's doing it for the power and for the fame. I mean, generally speaking, why do people want to be politicians and want to be? Is it for power? Because it generally isn't money. I mean, don't get me wrong. The money is a six-figure sum usually, and it's pretty okay. But it's not really for the money that people do it, is it?
I think it's a combination. There are three basic human ambitions why people run for office, and I think it's ego, power, and money, or a combination thereof. And I don't mean this in a cynical way, because we're all human beings, right? And if you want to change things, you have good plans, well, then you're the power guy, because you need power to change things, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a combination of the three. I think in some developing countries, for example, money is unfortunately a big driving force why people run for office. Because you can get very rich.
Yep.
In the West, I mean, in Europe, yeah. I mean, if you look at the net worth of politicians, probably it's more fame and power, and just also a basic interest in the topic. No, I think people like me, I got interested in politics when I was like 13 years old. And once you have the virus, you don't get rid of it.
Yeah. And I'm looking, by the way, is it wise for to throw a large net out, if you're campaigning, for example? Do you throw a net out just to the demographic that you want to appeal to? Or is it wise to say, you know, go on, if you're maybe a slightly older politician, when I say slightly older, 40 or 50, 60 years of age, to go on to say TikTok, which is something for the younger generation, or Snapchat? Or, you know, is it wise to go after the younger generation who, you know, probably a lot of them won't vote for you, but, you know, hey, you might get a few votes out of it. Is it better just to stick and focus on your own demographic?
It really depends. I mean, it depends on your targeting strategy. Now, the key there is you cannot appeal to everybody. You have to make a decision. You have to see, okay, this is the vote I need. How many votes do I need to win? I'm surprised how many people launch a campaign, plan a campaign, spend on a campaign. They don't know how many votes you need to win. You need a specific target, a number in your campaign plan. And you need a targeting strategy, a coalition, who these people are. How will you build your coalition that gets you to that target? And then based on that strategy, on that targeting coalition, you put together your campaign plan. It's usually a mix of tools depending on the target audience you want to reach. Mm. And then you have to stick to it. Now, I think that young people in the Western world are highly overestimated. There's a lot of talk, and everybody in politics has thought about how to mobilize young people. The reality is, with few exceptions, it's very difficult to mobilize them. Maybe if you're the Green Party, it's different. You really need them. In many other settings, I think old people are much more reliable in Europe. Mm. Yeah. Now, I've done campaigns in developing countries, in Southeast Asia. Half of the population is young. It's a totally different story.
Yeah. And when you look at Europe at the moment, we're seeing a shift across Europe. We're seeing it here in Ireland. We're seeing it in the UK. We're seeing it in America. We're seeing it across Europe. A shift to a more conservative vote, a more Republican vote, a more right-wing or centre-right vote. Why do you think that's happening? I mean, are these politicians better, or is it just people are looking for something different or looking for change?
Well, let's see what the results will be of the European elections now. But I have a feeling, and I assume you share that feeling, that there will be many right-wing right populists, however you want to call it, that will do very well in Germany, in Austria, in France. And there's a reason. And the reason is that the asylum immigration policy of Europe is really screwed.
Yeah. Reckless is probably a good word for it. Yeah.
Yes. And I think it's really immigration is the secret weapon of the right, because it's a topic where the left can't even think straight. They're like, knocked out ideologically, that they can't think straight about the issue. Mm. So it's the secret weapon of the right. I would like to add, the mirror opposite is the environment and climate change for the right. It's a secret weapon of the left, because that's a topic where the right cannot, it's just beholden by special interests.
But I suppose the politician has to be careful during his campaign that if he's going to be right of centre and immigration, say, will be one of his key policies, as you rightly said, it's the secret weapon of the right, that they don't go too far. Because if they go too far, then they come across as being racist. So there's a balance, isn't there, to try and stay logical, but also appease that market of people who want to control, say, immigration in this case. There's a balance, isn't there?
Yes. Absolutely. There's a balance. And again, in French, we say it's the tone that makes the music. There's a way of saying things. There's a way to show contrast. I think elections are always about showing contrast. Now, one thing I've learned in Asia is that you can kill with a smile. So, yes, you have to. It's a delicate line. And just to give the example of Germany, I mean, I think the parties other than the AfD, the right-wing party, have done a really brilliant job in demonizing the right-wing party. That anybody who is critical about the immigration policy is decried as racist and as right-wing.
Yeah.
It's exactly what you were saying, right? Yeah.
That's what happens here too, by the way, in Ireland as well. As soon as you open your mouth and you deny that, you know, a reckless immigration policy is a good thing, you're immediately some sort of right-wing racist.
Yes, and I think that's a big mistake by the left to do that, because, again, you have to, I mean, if you can't accept a problem, how could you be expected to solve a problem, right?
And how are voters across Europe now? How are their behaviours changing? Are their behaviours changing, or is it that politics is changing and the voters are actually looking for the same thing they were looking for 20 years ago?
That's a really good question. I think it's probably a combination of both. Certainly, there are things that are changing. I mean, the public opinion is becoming much more volatile. You see it in the UK, where there are like big movements from election to election. There are big changes, right? I mean, Boris Johnson won like a historic victory. Now it looks like the Conservative Party is hopeless. It's like, so the big changes, it's much more volatile. I mean, in France, there was like Macron, which I write about in the book. I mean, he came out of nowhere. There was a new party that won an absolute majority, and the whole party system just collapsed, right? So definitely that is changing. Now, I think because of immigration, I have a feeling that people have also some nostalgia and want to remember how it was before, no? And they want it back. So that's why I think yes and no.
Mm. I mean, how important is likability or somebody's appearance? Because I remember as a kid, when you'd be going to the polling station with your dad and you'd look at all the posters up on the poll, and I'm pretty sure there was voters that didn't really know an awful lot about politics, because I work in media, I know a bit about politics, but I assume most people don't know a huge amount about politics. They just know what they hear in the news. So how important is it for somebody who looks nice? In other words, people go into the polling station, they see a picture of a person, they go, oh yeah, he looks nice, I'll vote for him. So how important is it to look good?
Well, it doesn't hurt. Let me put it that way. Actually, there was a study done in a university in Switzerland, and they really made a model or a correlation between beauty and success at the polls. And actually, there was a correlation that clearly was the picture has an impact. So it doesn't hurt. Now, that said, if you look at Trump, I think he is actually quite dislikable, and people still vote for him. And I think so. If you have somebody, a situation like that, that's something you have to deal with. You have to be honest about it. You need a strategy on how to deal with. Now, I'd like to add another thing, though. I think that in the end, when it's all said and done, as much as we're unhappy with our politicians, we do elect them, and actually they represent our countries quite well. If you think about it, Donald Trump, in the end, when it's all said and done, is very American. Mm. If he would have been born as a German, he may do some great real estate in Frankfurt, but I bet he would not have risen to the hierarchy of any major party in Germany, for that matter. Vice versa, Angela Merkel governed Germany for 16 years. If she would have been born as an American, I think she may have become a professor in Harvard of chemistry, but I highly doubt she would have made through
she wouldn't have looked the part. Yeah. So that surprises me with Donald Trump. So his image is extremely important because it's marketable. You know, everybody talks about the orange the orange look and the hair and his physique and everything else. So his image is quite a marketable image because it doesn't change, I suppose, which is important for people to remember what he looks like. But the other thing as well is there such thing as overexposure? Because, again, if I go back to Donald Trump, and I hate to keep talking about Donald Trump, but, I mean, when we've seen recently, you know, the big surprises like Javier Milei, for example, you know, I mean, he did really well. It comes out of nowhere. But Donald Trump gets exposed constantly for the last 4 years. He's more or less had a four-year presidential campaign. Can you be overexposed?
Yes, if there is no content and no message. Brings us back to the big mistake candidates make when they have like your face without a message all over the place. That can be a reason why it's overexposed when there's no content, because I think people in the end do vote out of their own interest. What's in it for them? You need to tell them what's in it for them, right? Mm-hmm. Not just show your pretty face.
Yeah.
And for Trump, it's a very specific situation because I wrote a piece about that for Real Clear Politics on how the double haters will decide the election, because this is a very special case where actually a majority of the people has a negative opinion about both Trump and Biden. So there are people who really disapprove of both, the double haters, but in the end, they'll have to make a choice because that's what elections are about. You have to make a choice. And I think the double haters will decide the election. So in that very specific case, I think actually the key is to keep the focus on the other guy. Right. I just tweeted it earlier. I think if the attention, the main focus over the next month will be on Biden, Trump will win. If the main focus will be on Trump, Biden will win. The reason why Biden is behind now in the polls is because the focus is on him, because he's the incumbent president now. 4 years ago, it was different. The focus was on Trump. Because as I write in the book, an election with an incumbent is foremost a referendum on the incumbent.
I get you, I get you. So here's the thing, just finally, if you are running in Europe at the moment, what is it important to have one policy or can you have two or three? I mean, what would your policy be right now? Would you use the secret weapon of the right?
Well, it's usually a combination. It's usually a combination. It's not a laundry list, but it has to be a combination. And I think it was actually Bill Clinton who said, like, you have to give people everything they like from your opponent. You have to give them something they don't get from your opponent. And you have to tell them something about your opponent that they don't like. And I think it's actually a great recipe. So, yes, I mean, even if you're on the left, I would advise give people what they like from your opponent, and it's highly likely immigration.
Okay, so even if you are on the left, tell people, look, I'm going to sort out this immigration policy. As much as I believe people should be welcomed into Ireland, you know, and supported, you know, we can't have it abused. In other words, give them a little bit of it. Yeah.
Give them everything they like from your opponent. You neutralize the issue, take the issue off the table, and then fight the election on the issue that you're strong on.
Well, look, I have to say, I know you're a TEDx speaker as well, and you talk a lot about this, and you've got some, I'm looking at some of the stuff that people have said about you from the Washington Examiner and Mark Melman and John Zogby, and a lot of people have said some great things, by the way, about your book. So if anybody's thinking of running for election, the book is called Beat the Incumbent, Proven Strategies and Tactics to Win Elections, and it's by Louis Perron. Louis, listen, thank you very much indeed for joining us this evening. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and very interesting as well, apart from anything else.
Thank you, Neil, for having me.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.